Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Jan Morris Oxford is a literary portrait of one of Britain's most historically charged cities, written by a major travel writer known for combining observation, history, architecture, and civic atmosphere. Rather than functioning as a conventional guidebook or academic history, the book treats Oxford as a living organism shaped by its university. Colleges, rituals, buildings, weather, class structures, eccentrics, and myths. Morris draws on local history and anecdote to explain why the city has acquired such symbolic force in British culture, lending its name to a dictionary, an accent, shoes, marmalade, and a wider idea of cultivated authority. The book is especially concerned with the tension between enchantment and criticism. It celebrates Oxford's beauty and intellectual inheritance, but it also notices exclusion, complacency, damp climate, social division, and unfulfilled civic ambition. Its purpose is to help readers understand not only what Oxford contains, but how it feels, behaves, remembers, and presents itself. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, Oxford is both city and university, rather than a single institution. A central strength of Morris's book is its refusal to reduce Oxford to either a university or a picturesque town. The city and the university are treated as overlapping systems that have shaped one another for centuries. The colleges, libraries, chapels, quadrangles, and ceremonial customs dominate the public imagination, but Morris also attends to streets, shops, weather, local habits, social spaces, and the ordinary civic life around the academic enclave. This dual focus matters because Oxford's identity depends on interaction rather than separation. The university gives the city international prestige, economic structure, architectural grandeur, and ritual continuity. The city gives the university a physical and social setting, including labor, commerce, housing, conflict, and local memory. By presenting Oxford in this layered way, Morris helps explain why visitors often experience the place as more than a campus. It is a civic landscape where scholarship, tourism, privilege, trade, and daily routine coexist in close quarters. The book, therefore, corrects the simplified image of Oxford as merely dreaming spires by showing how its intellectual reputation is embedded in a dense urban reality. Secondly, anecdote and historical detail as tools for civic interpretation, Morris's method is not primarily chronological. The book moves through Oxford thematically, using anecdotes, historical episodes, famous remarks, institutional habits, and local peculiarities to build an interpretive portrait. This approach is important because Oxford is a city whose meaning is partly accumulated through stories. A strictly linear account of foundation, growth, reform, age, and modernization would explain events, but it would not fully convey the atmosphere of a place shaped by legend, memory, repetition, and self-conscious tradition. Morris uses small details to reveal larger patterns. Eccentric figures, college customs, university rivalries, architectural survivals, and social rituals become evidence of how Oxford imagines itself and how outsiders imagine it. The anecdotal structure also allows the book to balance affection with irony. It can praise the city's continuity while noticing its absurdity, or admire its learning while exposing its theatrical self-importance. The result is a form of travel writing that functions as cultural criticism. Readers are not just told what happened in Oxford, they are shown how history becomes local character. Thirdly, architecture, climate, and landscape as expressions of character. The book gives substantial attention to Oxford's buildings and physical setting. But Morris treats architecture as cultural evidence rather than as a catalog of styles. Colleges, chapels, towers, gardens, walls, and courtyards are presented as material expressions of continuity, hierarchy, learning, seclusion, and display. The built environment matters because it shapes conduct. Enclosed quadrangles encourage inwardness and corporate identity, while ceremonial spaces reinforce the impression that the university belongs to a long historical order. Morris also notices geography and climate, including the dampness and atmospheric heaviness often associated with the city. These elements complicate the romantic image of Oxford. Beauty is not separated from discomfort. Grandeur is not separated from weathering, congestion, or melancholy. The natural and built environments together help explain the distinctive mood of the city, at once luminous and enclosed, elegant and impractical. By connecting physical form to social meaning, Morris makes Oxford legible as a place where stone, water, gardens, and weather participate in civic identity. The result is more interpretive than architectural survey and more concrete than generalized praise. Fourthly, college life, hierarchy, and the town and gown divide, Morris pays close attention to the college system and to the social divisions it has produced or preserved. Oxford's colleges are not merely educational units. They are small corporate worlds with their own histories, loyalties, dining customs, architecture, and internal hierarchies. This structure gives the university much of its charm and resilience, but it also encourages separation from the surrounding city. The familiar town and gown divide is therefore not just a matter of student misbehavior or local resentment. It reflects deeper differences in status, wealth, authority, and cultural ownership. Morris's account is attentive to how Oxford has been loved, resented, admired, and mocked because it concentrates privilege in highly visible forms. Class, gender, religion, and institutional power all enter the portrait, especially as part of the city's inherited social order. The importance of this topic lies in its ability to prevent nostalgia from becoming uncritical. Morris acknowledges the attractions of college intimacy and tradition, while showing that the same features can foster exclusion, insularity, and theatrical superiority. Oxford emerges as a place of learning, but also as a stage on which British social distinctions have long been performed. Lastly, a classic portrait that remains valuable despite its historical limits, Oxford is valued partly because it is itself a historical artifact. The original work dates from the mid-20th century, and later editions revised aspects of it. But the book inevitably reflects the Oxford that Morris knew and interpreted in that period. This gives it both authority and limitation. Its strength lies in its close, stylish, and observant account of a city whose institutions still depend heavily on memory and continuity. Many of its insights into atmosphere, architecture, ritual, and reputation remain useful because Oxford has deliberately preserved much of its visible identity. At the same time, readers should recognize that the city and university have changed, particularly in relation to access, diversity, academic life, tourism, and urban pressure. The book should therefore not be read as a complete contemporary guide. It is better understood as a classic literary interpretation that captures enduring patterns while also revealing the assumptions of its era. This time-bound quality does not weaken the book's value. It clarifies its role. Morris offers a deeply informed snapshot of Oxford as myth, institution, and lived environment. In conclusion, Oxford is best suited to readers who want a literary and interpretive understanding of the city rather than a practical itinerary or a specialized academic history. Visitors to Oxford will benefit from it because Morris explains the meanings behind the buildings, customs, reputations, and social tensions that are easy to notice but hard to interpret without context. Readers of travel writing, British cultural history, urban portraiture, and university history will also find it useful, especially if they value prose that connects physical observation with historical implication. Its practical benefit is that it sharpens perception after reading it. Oxford appears less like a collection of famous colleges and more like a complex civic organism shaped by learning, privilege, architecture, weather, memory, and performance. Its intellectual benefit is that it shows how a place becomes symbolic, how institutions create atmosphere, and how admiration can coexist with criticism. Compared with ordinary guidebooks, it offers more depth, wit, and cultural texture. Compared with formal histories, it is more flexible, atmospheric, and attentive to lived character. What differentiates the book is Morris's ability to make Oxford intelligible as both fact and feeling. It stands out because it neither merely celebrates nor merely debunks the city. It studies the charm, contradictions, and historical weight that make Oxford persistently fascinating. If you would like to support Jan Morris, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.